Okay, I was told that, yeah, when the lights went down, then my mic would be live, so it'd be time to go. So they went down, and now I can't see you guys. So, welcome. You are the hardcore. I have to say thank you. It's Friday, the last day. It's after lunch, the last session. So I just want to start by saying thank you. I really appreciate you showing up to spend a little bit of time with me. Also, I want to start off with a few caveats just because I believe in transparency, as you'll see in the presentation. I also believe in transparency in the presentation. So I don't have demos. I'm not showing code. I'm not showing any features. It's a relatively high-level presentation, right? So if you're expecting to show hacking on stage or anything, it's probably not the right session for you. I just want to be upfront about that. I am going to talk about high-level concepts on security, privacy, a few things, what those mean to us at Microsoft, how we're trying to action them, and how those are influencing our overall approach. So if that's what you're here to hear, then great, stay. If not, I heard Mark Rincinovich is doing a really great session over at the same time. You know, you might want to check that out. So with that, I'll go ahead and get started. Also, given that it is the last session on Friday, last day, I've tried to go a little lighter on content, so I don't fully expect to go an hour and 15 minutes. Hopefully that won't be too disappointing to you. And I talked about with the guys at the back about questions. They've mics here for questions. I'm going to encourage them. My talk comes in kind of sections. So if you really get a burning question or you want to point out something you think I'm missing or you just want to actually weigh in, I'm going to go ahead and encourage you. I'll try to keep an eye on that mic. You come up, you can ask your question, we'll talk about it. If it's off topic, I might defer it to the end or something, but then I will take them as well. So with that, I want to talk a little bit. In the beginning here, I'm talking about forces creating change and the threats. So this is not new or cutting edge insight. I don't want to sell it that way. We've been talking about this for a couple of years. The forces, we did our paper, TWC Next paper in 2012, which talked about this. But it's relevant, and it's a good thing for Microsoft in the sense that that we've been thinking about so long, so we're starting to see its implementation in the things that are being delivered out in products and services to customers. So the threat continues to evolve. If many of you have been around in security as long as I have, which is probably not very many of you, but even around for the last 10 or 15 years, there's been a huge change. There have always been the traditional opportunistic threats. So that's the things where it's scattergun approach and hopefully somebody bites on the malware, that kind of thing. But more recently, a focus on persistent and determined adversaries. So we tend to not talk about APT. Some of it's advanced. Some of it's not advanced. It's just very persistent and well-funded. But the new threat is really this combination. So with that, let's look at the range. So there's the traditional malware on the internet. I contribute to the Microsoft Security Intelligence Report. There's always new stuff coming out. There are trends, but this is the view that I think most consumers or individual users, it's one of the things that affects their trust or their concern in products and services. A nuance on it, though, is the sophistication of deception. So I, using the very anecdotal metric of how often friends and family ask me about things, I find that almost weekly now, I'll get someone, friend or family, who'll send me something and say, hey, is this real? If it's in an email or if it's on a website with a screenshot, is this real? Because it seems like it might be real. To the point where half the time they're, yeah, that's real. That's the real thing. That's really is your bank contacting you. But they're skeptical even of that because of the sophistication of the social engineering techniques used. And then this third factor, government surveillance concerns. This has been interesting when I've went and talked to a lot of customers. 18 months ago, the Snowden revelations came out, PRISM. There was a lot of focus on it. A year ago, when I started talking, every customer wanted to really talk about a lot of the things we were doing. Recently, I talked with analysts, and they said, yeah, customers bring it up, but it doesn't seem to be changing behavior very much. It's one of those things they're concerned about, and yet they still have to get business done. So I'd be interested if you have a different perspective on it as well. You can share that. So governments and data. So I said, you know, I'm talking about these forces that change. So in this paper I referenced, we said it's important to understand two of the biggest things: data centricity and how governments are engaging in internet-related issues. So for us, around the issue of data centricity, I mean, when I joined Microsoft, we had Windows XP, and everything was about desktop, heavy client-side products. Now we're very heavily in the cloud, and this cloud represents, all of these services represents a huge aggregation of data. And so internally, it's changed our approach somewhat, which is, you know, partly what I'm going to talk about today. But really, the focus has shifted more to the online services and less to the endpoint. But from my perspective, from a Microsoft perspective, I consider the endpoint devices to be part of that, part of cloud, if you will. Because it's an entry point, and if something gets in through either your desktop or your device or whatever, it's all connected. Okay, so the other one, the other force that we said there, which is the role of government. So I want to just kind of share my view on this. I see really three distinct roles of government, and so when we talk about the issue of government affecting the internet, security, privacy, you have to be clear about which role you're talking about. So the first is user. Collectively, governments are some of the biggest end users in the world of our products and services. They're just like any other enterprise in that sense. They're acquiring software. They have the same security, privacy concerns as a user or IT administrator as any other big customer. And so we engage with them in that way, certainly. A second role they have is a protector. So typically within their own domain of influence, whether it's regional or whether it's at the national level, they have a role of protector, right? So they're passing law, they're setting policy, they're trying to define how to do critical infrastructure protection, how to engage with the private infrastructure. And then the third one, and this to me is more interesting because we talked about this before Snowden, which is exploiter. So governments are going to interact in the internet domain in order to pursue whatever their goals are, political responsibility. And a key aspect of that is access to data. So there's been a lot of talk about that. We did a survey in the spring, and this was focused on cloud security concerns. So talking to a lot of customers, and they could identify multiple things that they considered risks or concerns with cloud security. It's interesting there that government surveillance is there, but it shows up fairly low, actually, in the overall set of things. Malware's very high at the top. System outage or availability, if you want to think of it from a security point of view. Theft or loss of data. So the things you would expect if you work in the industry, but it's more the ordering that I find interesting. So now I want to shift to talking about, because there's a lot of issues, right? There's a lot of issues affecting trust in products and services, and there's a lot of projects that we have going on. But I want to talk about sort of four broad categories where we're investing to do that. So one, cybersecurity. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more. Second is data privacy. I've always considered security and privacy joined at the hip. When I graduated computer engineering, the first professional organization I joined was IEEE Security and Privacy. So that was at the end of the 80s. They were certainly considered together. Almost every professional considered themselves to be at least learning in both of those areas. Somewhere in the 90s, the early 2000s, they separated pretty significantly. So there's a lot of privacy specialists focusing on policy things and security specialists. The last few years, I've seen them come back together. And for us, particularly with data in the cloud and the issues we're dealing with, you can't even separate them very well. So the third one is compliance. And again, for me, this has been a new learning. It's not like compliance hasn't been an issue, but especially with cloud, 10 years ago, when I'd go and talk with customers, it was about updating or patching or attacks or whatever. Never once did I get a question about compliance. Now, when we start talking about shifting services from an in-house controlled data center out to potentially a provider's cloud, compliance becomes part of the security discussion. So within our teams, we actually have a pretty close interaction. A lot of the compliance things I would refer to are focused more on compliance with security regulations and policies. But still, it's very important in almost every big customer engagement. They want to say, okay, we have security concerns, we have potentially privacy concerns, but before we can actually adopt, move, change, implement, we need to talk about how you're going to help us continue to maintain compliance as we shift to this new model. And then finally, transparency. So for us, transparency, there's a lot of concerns, particularly cross-border concerns. I think my first week at Microsoft 12 years ago, I went to an executive briefing and the customer was like, do you have backdoors in your code? It's really hard to prove the negative. Our main approach to it is try to be as brutally transparent as possible to give customers every opportunity to try to determine for themselves that that we're on the up and up there. So I'll drill a little bit on these. I'm going to start first with security. A little bit of caveat here. I'm going to talk about kind of before and after. It's a little bit contrived, so let me just admit that. All right, but as I talk through it, I'll explain what I mean by that. So the older approach to security, it's kind of pre-APT, was really this approach to protect, where there was a belief or a fond hope that if we did everything right as security professionals, we did good architecture, we did good deployment, we did good processes, we could actually achieve this state of protection. And then, in the rare occurrence where it failed, then you would want to respond and get back to business as usual. But if you take the assumption, a little bit different assumption, which is now mostly accepted, probably by everybody in this room, is that you assume if someone is going to attack that they will succeed, it doesn't change it so much, but it evolves it. So you still have a protection phase. If you take it from a risk management approach, you're managing it down and you know someone, a dedicated person, can get around it. This is the contrived part. You have detection phase. We've always had detection. So we've debated internally, there are all these structures, frameworks to talk about how you break up the tasks that we do in work. We've talked about secure design and secure deployment and these things in the past. We've talked about end-to-end trust. So this one, protect, detect, respond, is currently where we've internally come to. And so that's basically why I'm using those three categories. And it's useful because with the change to this more data-centric approach with cloud and data centers, we've got more commonality. So we have, like, Brett Arsenault, our own CSO, who manages the Microsoft network. Okay, he manages our data center for us, if you will. So he has his set of security concerns. We have the people who manage cloud data centers. They're very customer-focused, and they have their concerns. We have the policy and process people, such as my boss, Scott Charney, who look at the SDL and that. So they have their approach to security. And then you have all the engineering VPs over the services and products. So they have been meeting pretty frequently, and they've said, look, we first of all need a common framework so that we can talk about the different things we're doing and investing. And so this is it. So we've always had detection within security, you know, antivirus detection, that sort of thing. But if you look at them in a common context, it's not just protect, detect, respond, but it is evolving them to a new way. So when I think of protection now, it's not just a hard perimeter. It's about thinking about architecting into separated modules of containment. So for example, if I was implementing a service for the cloud, I might architect it so that my customers were split up into 100 different cells or modules. What that gives me then is if one of them is attacked and penetrated, that assumption we were talking about, then the other 99% are all in a separate containment, architected separately and not at risk just because there was one. So there's protection. That's not a new, domains of trust is an old kind of firewall concept. But if you take it and start applying it in new ways, which you need to do, and then you get benefits of things like that protection in terms of reliability. So if you've got a large scale, maybe you break it into 20 different parts, then if something goes down, availability is still there for others. So an evolved way of thinking about protection. Detection too. I mean, it's not just about malware. There's new techniques in terms of scanning. Intrusion detection's been around a long time, but with more data available in terms of big data, there's a lot more machine learning can be applied to this, and that's where we see it happening in what we're doing at Microsoft. I'll give a couple examples later, and then respond. So there's various levels of response. There's immediate response or crisis response, but it's really about getting back to business as normal. So you start to see not just security aspects, but resiliency, reliability, things like that coming in there. So when I talk about our security strategy now, it has broadened from a more narrow focus of what we'd traditionally call security to a lot of adjacent issues that are now combined together. All right, data privacy, two things here. Basically, we have a very comprehensive approach. Our secure development lifecycle has privacy steps in there that we call it our security development lifecycle. And then another concept for our services is customers own their own data. So our teams, one of the things they're guided by is to develop in the ability for data to be portable. This is part of the concept that the customers own the data, not us. And if that's the case, they need to be able to potentially migrate it to somewhere else. We don't use the data for advertising. And then we have trust centers on the web that define our data handling policies. Encryption update, I'm not going to go into this too much. I like to give it in here because we've committed to giving periodic updates on that. With the disclosures, we made a commitment about a year ago around encryption. We're making good progress toward those, and we've made several announcements through the year to use things like perfect forward secrecy in Office 365, and these have rolled out throughout the year. So there's a few more things coming before the end of the year, but that's on track. And then compliance. So this has been interesting. I've been involved in this 2 or 3 years. We now, as part of it's basically partnership between the groups, if you think of the Azure group, Trustworthy Computing, and some of the process groups. Initially, you look at these services, and as you know, Microsoft in the past was very business unit oriented. And that created a lot of agility for the business unit, like if I take an Office 365, to really optimize features, roadmap, capabilities, priorities towards their individual customer set. But what we found when compliance started being part of the issue for security and the other things, my apologies, they would come in and they say, if we're going to adopt, you've got an inconsistent approach on these. And we did have. So we if you looked at these a couple of years ago, it would be yes, no, 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 yes. It would be different auditors across them. And it made it really complicated for customers. So we've now got a common compliance leadership team. They meet monthly. They prioritize things. They issue mandates that everybody goes across. So we've identified, the top things to be compliant with, and we've made really good progress towards being more consistent across the main business services there. And then transparency. The main things I work closest with is like our secure development process, and then our operations process for secure operations as well. We've We implemented both of those cases. I look at the second one as more of a network data center approach to operations that is similar to what we did for SDL for development. So we implemented process procedures. We continually update it. We do internally. Once we get it well documented and some lessons learned, then we start sharing it out with the industry. And that's what we've done on that as well. Government data requests, we try to be very transparent there. Philosophically, we oppose gag orders. So our first thing, if we get a request and we're allowed to, is to point the request to the customer themselves. If we can't do that, then we notify the customer we've gotten it, and only if we're legally bound do we not. And then where we consider requests for data egregious, we will challenge them in court. So you may know we've got a court case against a U.S. government right now for a request for data in a data center in Ireland, and we are fighting it on behalf of a customer. So our basic philosophy is we want to be the trusted stewards of data, and that's the key thing, is the stewards. So we view the data as the customer, as their data. We're like a landlord. So when it's their data in our house, we're just a landlord. We don't have legal right to turn it over, and that's what we're basically fighting in court. Now, if they come after our data, metadata, things that is from our operations, then that's a different situation. Transparency centers. So, and we've continued to open some of these regionally to allow people to come in and review source code and provide some assurance there are no back doors. There's other things that go on there too. All right. So, in a short session, and with all the things going on across the big thing at my big company like Microsoft, I'm not going to drill down into all of them. But I thought it was useful to kind of show you the pyramid as we think about it. Foundational. This, to me, the foundational stuff has nothing particularly to do with features. This is where I've worked most of my career at Microsoft. This is what I used to say when I'd meet with customers. They'd say, oh, you're a security company. I said, yes, when you say security company, you're thinking of a Symantec or somebody who does features, that sort of thing. That's true. We have people who work on that sort of thing. But we also have people who are trying to make sure the next flight simulator doesn't have vulnerabilities in it, right? Not security features. It's about process and resiliency and having better quality code. So that's the foundational. So secure development lifecycle, which is now ours is a use case, an example in ISO 27034. All the other compliance things I showed before, operational security assurance for services, defenders, industry work with the hardware vendors for TPMs, all of that stuff we consider foundational. It enables more things. It enables more security, privacy things in our products and services. So on top of that, then there's things that you've probably heard about this week, Azure Active Directory, identity management, BitLocker, those things. And then above that is the service offering. So for this pyramid and the protect, detect, respond, this is sort of the common visual when our own chief security officer comes and talks to our product teams, they use to talk about where they're talking about. And so, for example, in our own IT department, our CSO has a drill down under protect, detect, respond where he's got about 10 to 15 processes under each of those, projects going on that fall under each of those. And he can come back and say, okay, and this identity-related project I'm working on that falls here, and we can try to get more synergy between lessons we're learning in our own data center, lessons we're learning in our cloud data centers, and then feed those more directly into the engineering teams. So from here, I have just a few samples of things in terms of products and services that I think are interesting to highlight. So as I get into that, I will say what this is meant to represent is people make basically the standard for cloud deployment is hybrid. There's going to be some mix of customer managing it all, managing their own desktops, managing their own, to all the things they outsource. And so the thing I'm emphasizing here is just that it truly is a partnership. When you're talking about cloud services, the security of you, the customer, is going to depend to some degree, depending on which thing you're talking about, to the controls that are implemented by the provider. So I'm not going to dwell on this other than to say, whatever provider you're talking to, whether it's us or others, I encourage you to approach it as a partnership and ask the questions you need to ask to reassure yourselves. So some cool things, like say, I just wanted to pick a few examples of newer things that have come out. In Office 365, they're allowing you to put in define custom policies. Here's an example. It's a super easy example, but there you are. You know, where they can define what looks like credit card data. If it gets detected going on there, the person trying to send it will actually be held up from sending. They'll be shown a policy tip. They can drill down, and they can get actually, you know, company-specific policy, and then decide if they want to go ahead and send or why, or there could be more rigorous enforcement. So some things that have been shown to help people avoid the own mistakes that they're making, basically. Let's see. Next example, multi-factor authentication. We've recently rolled out multi-factor authentication, so you can get phone calls back, SMS message of a code, and then there is a mobile app that can be used as well. And I think, okay, nope, not there. So now one of the things I referred to earlier is how we're able to use some machine learning, use some of the big amounts of data that get gathered. So there's several things that, in terms of Azure Active Directory, where it will flag for you suspicious sign-in behavior of a user. I'm going to show you two here. This is just the more general one. So again, I'm not claiming this is rocket science. Credit card companies have known for years that if your credit card got used in Redmond, Washington, and 5 minutes later in Australia, you were probably not physically in both places at once. But it's the same concept here that that we're gathering the data, can identify some suspicious activity, and put it forward in the management interface to you to be able to pursue and take further action. There's a more fun one I like. Oh, okay. So yeah. So also, one of the actions you can do if you detect a suspicious behavior is you can actually then enable a requirement of two-factor authentication, so that whichever one of them is the real one can continue to get in using the two-factor, and whichever one is not, then is held out. All right. So this is a visualization. I mentioned before I work on the security intelligence report. We pull malware data from a bunch of different sources, from different services we've got. There's also just some analysis work we do in the Digital Crimes Unit for identifying botnet traffic. And so we built up this big database. And one of the things, what this is representing, the visualization is, that we're zooming in to near Redmond there, is IP addresses associated with some sort of malware. And we're going to Singapore. Just to be clear, we don't know specifically like what address, what company are these in. These are generalized to a block area, which is how they're mapped out. but we do have the associated IP address. Now, because of dynamic IP address assignment, that means that an IP address that may have been suspicious could also have been assigned to somebody who's not infected. And so how this shows up potentially in terms of benefiting customers is, this is similar, this is a different screen that I showed you earlier about the suspicious logons on Azure Active Directory. So this one is specifically on possibly infected devices. And so essentially what's going on in the background is we've got this big database of IP addresses which in recent time frame have been associated with some sort of malware. And then if this is your instance of Azure and you've got your employees signing on and they sign on with an IP address, we can do a check and say, oh, look, that IP address was recently associated with the zero access piece of malware or configure, and can raise that flag to you. Now, it's a suspicious one, We're not telling you it's definitely infected, and that's because of what I said earlier. This with reassignment, somebody coming in from their home machine, maybe they've got an address this week that was assigned to a different machine 2 weeks ago, because that's basically how their ISP does it. But either way, there's a suspicious activity, and then it gives you the opportunity to go and investigate, check the machine, figure out something more. So I am nearing in on my time, so I'm going to end quite early. Summary, threats are going to continue to evolve and challenge people's trust in technology. Microsoft, we're relentless in our commitment to cybersecurity, data privacy, compliance, and transparency. These are the four big buckets where we are looking at the threat problem and the ways that we feel customers best want us to engage, not just a more narrow focus. And we will continue to innovate and try to get it into product and services to help you manage your risks. So now I have the mandatory slides. I know you all love these. So I'll quickly flip through these. If you do have any questions on any topic at this point, I'll encourage you to come up to the mic. Otherwise, I'll be letting you out in just a few minutes. So here, I'll leave this up a few minutes. These slides are available to you, so I know you can get this, or if you want to take a picture of it. Information, Azure classes, and then, of course, submit your evaluation. I hope you give me points for ending early and don't take away points, but, you got to do what you got to do. And then there's further resources. There we go. All right, well, thank you very much. Again, Ali, you are the troopers to be here on Friday afternoon, and especially staying to the end. If you have questions for the group, that's fine. Otherwise, if you want to come up, I'm happy to talk and ask.